We'd all save a lot of energy if who we seemed to be matched who we really were. In other words, no images to maintain. Most people worry about how they're perceived, so they'll smile on the outside while crying on the inside. Their lives are often an act for the benefit of others. We can lose the game face, because in the final analysis, God is in charge of our reputations. To learn more, stay with us. From Chicago's Moody Church, this is Running to Win with Dr. Erwin Lutzer, whose clear teaching helps us make it across the finish line. Turn with us to Acts chapter 5. Erwin Lutzer comes now to teach us that when God is first, He owns our reputations.
Many years ago, I went into a county fair and walked into a house of mirrors. I don't know if you've ever done that, but when I was there, you walked into one room and you looked at the mirror and you were very tall and exceedingly skinny. And then you went into another room where there was a mirror that made you very, very short and exceedingly rotund. And all the other mirrors did something in between. Every one of them distorted who you were. When you stop to think of it, we actually live in a house of mirrors. The whole world is a house of mirrors. And what most of us want to do is to find a mirror that makes us look good. What we want to do is to look good to others. And we want others to see us the way we want them to see us. Nothing more, nothing less. And so who we are inside and who we are on the outside oftentimes, it's two different people. It's interesting that in the book of Acts, when revival was breaking out in the early chapters, Satan tried to stifle the work by making sure that the church received pressure from without. They were persecuted. But when you get to chapter 5, you discover that he begins to change his tactics. From now, it is not outside influence, it is inside. What he wants to do is to use a couple in the church, a married couple, and he wants to use that couple to destroy the church. The text, of course, is the 5th chapter of Acts, though we shall begin just a verse or two before that in chapter 4. Chapter 4, verse 36 is really a part of the story. Joseph, a Levite from Cyprus, whom the apostles called Barnabas, which means son of encouragement, sold a field he owned and brought the money and put it at the apostles' feet. Now a man named Ananias, together with his wife Sapphira, also sold a piece of property. With his wife's full knowledge, he kept back part of the money for himself, but bought the rest and put it at the feet of the apostles. They didn't lie verbally. They gave the impression that they were giving all of the money, when in point of fact, they were giving only part of it. Here was Barnabas, you know, who sold this land, and he brought the money and put it at the apostles' feet. And one day Ananias and Sapphira were having a discussion, and they said to one another, you know, it'd be good if we do that too, because maybe, who knows, Ananias, if people see you do that, you might become a deacon in the church. And Sapphira, you might be put in charge of women's ministries. So let's pretend that we're as spiritual as Barnabas. Now it's interesting that as we think about this story, a couple of words by way of introduction. First, it is a sin that was instigated by Satan. Instigated by Satan. Because I'm sure you do know the rest of the story, it says, verse 3, Peter said, Ananias, how is it that Satan has so filled your heart that you have lied to the Holy Spirit and have kept for yourself some of the money you received for the land? Didn't it belong to you before it was sold? And after it was sold, wasn't the money at your disposal? In other words, you didn't have to give anything if you didn't want to give. This is totally voluntary. What made you think of doing such a thing? You have not lied to men, but to God. Why has Satan filled your heart to lie to the Holy Spirit? I'm going to say something now that could be life-transforming in your walk with God. I hope many of the things that I say could be life-transforming. What Satan does is he puts ideas in our minds that we think are our own, so we're not afraid of those ideas. And the thought of sinning and the decision to sin is not fearful to us because we think it's our decision. Could you imagine what would have happened if Satan would have appeared at their breakfast table one time in all of his fury and all of his horror and said, "I have an idea for you, lie about your giving pattern." They'd have been terrified. But because he's invisible and because he puts the ideas in our minds that go along with our pride, we think that it is okay, and so we choose to sin, and we think, "I'm sinning because I want to sin." And that's part of the story. The other part is it was instigated by Satan, who puts ideas in our minds to sin. How did Satan want to use this couple? Well, imagine if they had been exalted in the church. Furthermore, word would have gotten out that this is what happened. And you know what? They went on to leadership within the church. And so people would have begun to think to themselves, it's okay to be a hypocrite. And they may have even thought, it is okay to sin. Because after all, isn't this an era of grace? Isn't this the era in which Jesus bore God's wrath? So we don't have to have any fear of sinning. And that, like leaven, would have permeated the whole church, and if not checked, could have destroyed it. It was a sin instigated by Satan. Could I say also that it was motivated by pride? Of course. Because they wanted to be thought of better than they really were. They wanted to keep this hidden agreement within their own hearts, and they wanted to project this aura of spirituality and commitment, and they wanted to make sure that everyone not only saw what they gave, but to make sure also that they were honored for it. And they lied to pull it off. What I'd like to do is to use their story to introduce us to three more laws of stewardship. Now, if you were with us last time, you know I gave you five laws of biblical stewardship. I encourage you to find that message, tape, CD, whatever, because this is an extension of it, and you really do need that first part to understand this part. Except to say that the early church in the last part of the book of Acts gives us an example of the five laws of stewardship in a positive example. Ananias and Sapphira introduce us to three other laws of stewardship, and they do it through their bad example. We can learn from the good, and we can learn from the bad. What are the next three laws? The first one is the law of single-minded motivation. Single-minded motivation. Ananias and Sapphira introduce us to this question, who do we give to and why do we give? Do we give to be seen? Do we give to be well thought of? Or do we really genuinely give because we love to give and because we love God? That's the core issue that's at stake here, a very important issue. Now, I have to take a moment and tell you about our policy here at Moody Church. At Moody Church, our giving is secret. We don't publish a list of who gives what. When I was growing up on the farm, we went to this little church where there were maybe 30 people. If you had 40, you had a crowd. And at the end of the year, they used to put up on the bulletin board of the church the giving of all of the people. And I remember, even as a boy, hearing about some farmer who owned four or five sections of land. He gave $300 that year. Oh, what a sacrifice. $300, and God gave him a bumper crop. You know, if we did that here at the Moody Church, I think giving would increase. I think it would. Publish it on the internet. I want you to know today that sometimes we do know what people give when they tell us, and that's perfectly fine. There are people who sometimes want to discuss their gift. Maybe they want to know where it's going to be designated. Maybe they want to know how it's going to be given. Maybe they want us to know. At times people have come to me and said, you know, I'm praying about what to give. And so for all of those reasons, we may know what someone gives, but it is always initiated by the giver. And that's perfectly fine. But as a policy, there are two reasons why we have giving here as a secret. First, for your benefit. For your benefit. We want to minimize the possibility that we have people like Ananias and Sapphira who give to be recognized, who give to be noticed, who give because they secretly hope it will lead to a higher office in the church. And so what we do is we say, thank you for your gift, but we do not know that gift, and what you give is known to one or two people responsible for the accounting and to God. There's a second reason why we do it. Not only for your benefit, but for our benefit as a staff, because we don't want to treat you differently based on your giving pattern. Now, that's the church policy, and it is held to. Now, the downside, of course, is people who don't give anything absolutely love that policy. They love it. As I mentioned last week, it may come as a bit of a shock and most assuredly a disappointment to know that there are hundreds of people who attend Moody Church every Sunday, members, not dozens, but hundreds, who give nothing, nothing at all, year by year. And these people bless them. When we hear about what God is doing over at Kids Club, they clap just as loudly as the people sitting next to them. Now, we don't know who they are, but I'm sure that they clap just as loudly, even though they've not given a dime to the ministry, they've not given to missions, they've not given to the opportunities that God has given us here, and yet they are pretending that they're on board and they're rejoicing with everyone else. See, the problem with that is not just because we need the money, though as I mentioned last time, it'd be good to have more, and we think of what we could do, but that's not really the issue. They are cutting out the possibility of God rewarding them openly. You remember Jesus said, let your giving be in secret, and your Father will reward you openly. Give God that privilege.
Well, my dear friend, this is Pastor Lutzer, and again, we're talking about giving because we're speaking about Ananias and Sapphira, and my message has to do with giving God our reputation. You see, what they wanted to do is they wanted to look good, and specifically, they wanted to look better than they were, and as a result, they lied about the land, didn't they? And they kept back some of the price. Now, they were not under obligation to give everything that they had sold the land for. They were not under obligation to give it all to the church. They could have withheld some of it. Their sin was in pretending that they gave it all. Pretending. Well, my friend, this business of money is very important, isn't it? Let's not use money to enhance our reputations. When we give, let us be willing to give in secret and to trust God to reward us openly. And of course, in doing that, we shall understand what it means to have secrets with God and to be individually blessed by Him.
Thank you, Dr. Lutzer. Dr. Erwin Lutzer has brought part one of He Owns Our Reputation, the fifth message in his series, When God Is First, taken from the book of Acts. Tomorrow, more on your money and your reputation for how you use it. Running to Win comes to you from Chicago's Moody Church to help you understand God's roadmap for your race of life. The eight messages in this series can be yours on CD, cassette, or MP3. For full information, call toll-free 1-800-215-5001. That's 1-800-215-5001. Ask about When God Is First when you call. Take time to visit our website at runningtowin.org. And don't forget, Running to Win is supported by listeners like you. This is Dave McAllister. Find out what happens to Ananias and Sapphira. Join us for tomorrow's Running to Win.